really appreciate the opportunity today to share with you the implementation of a lot of the technologies that our previous speakers have outlined. Drs. Taylor and Van Tassel have shared with you the wow, the hype, the excitement of the technology, and how we're working towards implementing that is what I'd like to share with you next. And in terms of Dr. Taylor's slope of enlightenment, I say many days at the office were chugging along in the bus up that hill, Dr. Taylor. And it's very exciting, and some days the bus rolls back a little bit, but we're sure learning a lot, and it's a pleasure to share our experiences with you today. Just to give you an outline of where we're going in the next few minutes, I'll talk a little bit about the role of AGI in making this implementation of putting genomics into our expected progeny differences, or EPDs, at the American Angus Association. Particularly, my focus will be primarily on carcass traits today, and you'll see the components of that as well. I'll also include the BIF approach that we've taken to this implementation and our various collaborators. We have a very unique approach to the data flow and information exchange to make this genomic enhanced EPD concept a reality. We'll show you the results that we're working with, the genomic relationships that are incorporated into our EPDs, as well as some of the EPDs and accuracy examples. And then I want to share with you some of the challenges that we've experienced in just less than a year. You know, with all the technologies that Dr. Taylor and Dr. Van Tassel talked about, we're very excited about them, but we're living the reality and living the dream each day at the American Angus Association that as this technology advances, this is us a lot of day with our coffee cup on top of the spaceship from Starbucks each morning, that people stay the same, and so we still have some of the obstacles in terms of explaining the classic EPDs that have been around for quite some time, whether it be birth weight, weaning weight, yearling weight, as well as incorporating these new advancements. Just to give you a big picture, AGI was formed by our leadership at the American Angus Association. It's one of the four subsidiaries. You're probably most familiar with Certified Angus Beef. Well, AGI would be another subsidiary that was initially established in 2007 to not only run the genetic evaluation for the American Angus Association, but now we run genetic evaluation services for a total of 8 breed organizations. Initially, when AGI was formed, we spent the lion's share of our time on the first objective, that genetic evaluation piece. But now we spend a substantial amount of time on the second and third objectives of working with this DNA technology as well as trying to take it to breeders and the beef industry. And so that's what we're going to focus on today. We don't try to do this all on our own in no way, and we've been very fortunate to have a huge list of collaborators on numerous research projects and exploration of new technologies, whether it be universities or research institutions. So you'll see this thread throughout. In looking at the classic information that goes into expected progeny differences or EPDs, what we've tried to do is provide a seamless approach to incorporating genomic information, molecular breeding values into EPDs. We didn't want to add additional boxes on the performance pedigree, additional listings of traits, and have that duplication. We wanted to wrap it into one nice piece. And that's a challenging step and daunting on a lot of days, but we've taken the BIF approach that will now appear in the new guidelines, where we're trying to report this information seamlessly into expected progeny differences. and utilizing the corresponding BIF accuracy. And so this is the theme or the approach that we've taken. You know, we just didn't wake up one morning and it all came together, and this has been a long-term project that started about 2006, 2007 in terms of the research that was being conducted through Mary L. Igenity, University of Missouri, to develop prediction equations that we could ultimately roll this information into our expected progeny differences. So the role of AGI, American Angus Association, in collaboration with Dr. Mike McNeil, was to estimate the variance-covariance structure that was necessary to pull in not only the phenotypic data that we had for traits, but incorporate the molecular breeding values in and ultimately arrive at an expected progeny difference, or EPD. We started with the carcass traits, and we had a lot of familiarity with these traits and a lot of good database to work with and previous research to fall back on. So that was the logical step, and I'll share a lot of that with you today. In terms of the current panel that we use, it's derived from the 50K chip that Dr. Taylor mentioned, and Dr. Taylor did a lot of long-term work with Angus-specific data and databasing Angus information to help us arrive at utilizing and implementing the Angus-specific panel provided to us by Igenity. So you see a long list of collaborators here, researchers Dorian Garrick and others at Iowa State, the Taylor Lab, the Bob Schnabels, as well as the scientific resources available to us through the Igenity team. Dr. McNeil helped us quite extensively. When you think back, we used to have carcass and ultrasound EPDs. And so the first thing we had to do is, well, where are we going to put this genomic information? And so we had two sets of EPDs running around, one for ultrasound and one for carcass. And so we enlisted Dr. McNeil and his research to help us first pull together using ultrasound as an indicator trait and then having one set of carcass EPDs. Then we were able to work on incorporating the genomic results into that mathematical model. So where we are today in terms of looking at the correlation between our phenotypic data and the molecular breeding values for the carcass traits. So we're using the molecular breeding values provided from Igenity and the phenotypic data that we have for carcass and ultrasound, and ultimately deriving, you know, what's that correlation between the molecular breeding value and the phenotypic data that we have. And so those correlations are somewhere in the order of about 0.6. So we're accounting for about 42% of the additive genetic variance for marbling, for example. And this is a World Congress publication that Dr. McNeil has put together that's in press. So just sharing with you the magnitude of those correlations, because that's what's going to impact a couple of the accuracy examples that I'll show you later. So just to give you a timeline, you know, we're not even a year into this, and it's striking for me how fast this is moving. Dr. Van Tassel mentioned how rapidly he's seen this technology evolve. It's exciting for us in terms of the slope of enlightenment Dr. Taylor mentioned and putting this into practice. Dr. Taylor mentioned last year at BIF that the association was working on this concept. And in September 2009, AGI, which is housed in the parent association in St. Joseph, Missouri, we began accepting the DNA samples from breeders coming into AGI and then making these Igenity results Angus-specific, to making them available to the breeders, and the breeders can access this information once it's received on their association's login account. And so shortly after those first samples begin to commercially arrive and results back to the association, we began doing a weekly carcass evaluation, a full national cattle evaluation, to include these genomic values. And so that was in October 2009 with our first generation panel. And then in March 2010, this was updated through the Igenity research and reestimating the variance components that I described previously to have our 384 reduced panel a product of that 50K chip. So we are rocking along right now at less than a year, and I want to share with you how this flow of information takes place. Just big picture, what first happens is that the breeder can order the FTA cards, collect the blood samples, and then they go ahead and let us know what animals are going to be involved in this profiling. And so they can do a lot of this electronically through their login account at the association. So then the samples, the actual biological material on those FTA cards, is sent to AGI, the American Angus Association, at St. Joe. So from that point, then we match up the samples to the orders for the genomic profiles, and then we uniquely code, using the barcode system, those animal IDs. So as you can see right now, the breeder is a customer of AGI, and AGI is a customer of Igenity. And so we retain that anonymity with those animal IDs. Then the genomic work begins at the Igenity lab, and they process those samples, and then ultimately a flat file comes back to us electronically. And at some point during late in the week, the door slams down, and any data that's come in, whether it's genomic results, ultrasound data, carcass data, or harvest data that's come into the association, then is rolled into the national cattle evaluation. So when that file rolls back with us, we already know which animals have been profiled. So you don't have to jump back and figure out which results go with which animals. And so a lot of the work, the grunt work's been done initially when those first samples are sent in to AGI. So this model a little bit reminds you perhaps of the ultrasound model of previous days and how we've centrally processed information into our ultrasound EPDs. We can do some archiving of the remaining DNA for the breeders, and they're aware through their login account when the results are available. Just a snapshot of the login account and where breeders can go in, and they can see if their profile scores have been posted, and then when the carcass evaluations run each week, they can access that information readily every Friday morning. It's pretty much every Friday morning that, unless there's a holiday, that we flip our carcass evaluation. And just a snapshot of an example of some of the screenshots from this. And so when they order the panels, it's $65 per animal. Just to, as a reminder, we're running a full national cattle evaluation on a weekly basis with those expected progeny differences being available to the breeders and allied industry every Friday morning. And so it's like the six-month evaluation they used to get every summer and around Christmas. Now they have access to their carcass EPDs on a weekly basis. And this is just, again, a reminder of the model that Dr. McNeil helped us get started. We use the harvest data, so we're ultimately driving at those carcass traits, marbling, ribeye, fat thickness, and carcass weight. And then this is structured where the ultrasound data and the genomic molecular breeding values are in as indicator traits, and we partition out our ultrasound data specifically by gender, bulls, heifers, steers. Another added piece of this is in the genomic portion. As I mentioned, we're now on our second generation of informative panels, and so we incorporate both of those. So if an animal had a first generation panel and a breeder goes ahead and orders the newer generation panel, we incorporate that information as well into that genetic evaluation each week. So we're really having a large time with this with the weekly carcass evaluations. When I think that we run an evaluation once a week, it's fabulous to have that information, whether it's carcass data coming in, ultrasound data, and watching how many records roll in each week into that evaluation. And we essentially do the same checks that we would do on a six-month basis, but now we do those weekly, and we've automated a lot of that, and we've kind of learned as we've rolled along with this. And so on a Friday morning, a breeder can look up an animal, and this is just an example screenshot of the EPD pedigree lookup, and they can see those carcass EPDs updated. And one of the trigger points is they typically look at the accuracy, and if the animal had an interim before with a 0.05 accuracy and they see the accuracy jump up on the marbling EPD to about 0.3, then they go, oh, my profiles are in this week. And so we do a lot of Q&A with the breeders as well. Also, our dollar value indexes are calculated on the fly, and so when the EPDs are updated, the dollar values are updated as well for $B, $F, $G, the grid and the beef value and the feedlot piece. We're also working towards one of the questions when you go out and you talk about weekly carcass EPDs from the breeder perspective, they say, well, when will you start doing weekly evaluations on the other traits? And that kind of makes you cringe because that's a computational effort that we are already working through, but we are definitely looking towards increasing the frequency and from which we run our growth and calving ease evaluations. So that's the next up and coming future piece. And realistically, when you have breeders ordering genomic results, you can't wait 6 months to kick it into their EPDs and give them some results back. And so that was one of the major pushes towards going to more frequent evaluations, was to give more rapid feedback on the genomic piece into the EPDs. So just summarizing here, if a calf at any age receives a profile, comes into that weekly evaluation, it's a full national cattle evaluation for the carcass EPD traits, and so you have harvest data in there as well as the scan information. And so you're essentially bypassing that interim estimation that we've done previously. Profile results roll in, as well as we fit a four-generation pedigree on the carcass evaluation and the classic animal model evaluation that you've heard those concepts described this week. So we are still receiving harvest data, and sometimes we get questions, do you still get carcass data in? And a lot of weeks we'll have 300, 500 carcass records come in. So it's really exciting to see that piece as well. Okay, just two examples real quickly so you have some figures in mind. This would be a typical example on a weekly carcass evaluation. The first set of boxes are as if just old classic way of half the sire, half the dam as a pedigree estimated interim. We assign a default accuracy of 0.05 to those. So those are the interims, and that's assuming that the dam does have a national cattle evaluation EPD as well as the sire. So genomic profile results cruises into the association, goes through the weekly evaluation, and that second set of boxes marked new illustrates to you that we have some changes in the EPDs. The EPDs change. Some go up, some go down. You order a profile, your EPDs don't always move in the direction that you'd like. And so we have some stay the same. We have varying amounts of information. But in this example, typical accuracy values for marbling somewhere in the order of about 0.38. And that's a reflection of that correlation of about 0.65 that we have between the marbling and the molecular breeding values. Just as another example, in this particular picture, this is a cow, and she has her own ultrasound scan record, and she also has 11 progeny that have been scanned. The first section of boxes is old way. So she's been through a national cattle evaluation, and those EPDs and accuracies reflect her own record, her pedigree, all those ties, and the 11 scan prog. So the new blue box illustrates what happened to her EPDs. In this case, she took a jump for some of the various traits, particularly marbling. But the point I want to share with you is you can see how her accuracy went up about 12 hundredths on the marbling, for example, from 0.25 to 0.37. So in this generation panel, we're really seeing some movers in terms of accuracy, even when animals have their own record and scan prog as well. And there's numerous examples we could work through, but we just wanted to share this, what we're living right now. And it really is an exciting time. So just kind of summarizing the advantages or the opportunities that have been provided to us by implementing this technology, we really feel like we're providing the breeders with the best predictions possible. So we're surpassing the classic ratios that they've leaned on, as well as the interims, and providing a really nice selection tool in a rapid time frame. We essentially get the genomic information in without having to wait the six-month time frame for us to flip the evaluations. And it is a full national cattle evaluation. So we get that question sometime, but you're getting the same bang that you are receiving in July and December evaluations that the association was releasing on that weekly time frame for the carcass traits. So what's next? You know, we've been almost a year on the genomic enhanced carcass EPDs. So what are we working on now? We have a lot of multi-year research projects on feed efficiency, biological efficiency, just examples of these: University of Illinois, Iowa State, North Carolina State University. We also have a collaborative work that we do with Midland Bull Test to pull together this feed intake data. And so we're focusing on that right now here in the next couple of months going into fall. And so what Dr. McNeil talked about yesterday afternoon, and many of you all might have been in that packed session where he described his research on the residual average daily gain values. So if you think about having a couple of animals all on constant feed, which one gained more, this concept from a genetic perspective. And I won't bog down on the models because Dr. McNeil described that extensively yesterday, but what I want to share with you is next we've assessed rolling in the molecular breeding value for dry matter intake into this multi-trait model that he described that would ultimately lead us to a residual average daily gain EPD. And so just to share with you that genetic correlation that we've arrived at between the dry matter intake, that molecular breeding value, dry matter intake from iGenity, and the phenotypic intake data from the various research projects, breeders, Midland, is somewhere in the order of about 0.45. So we just thought it would be really nice as we roll out this new efficiency tool that we also go ahead and incorporate the genomic piece. So just to give you a snapshot of what we're working on as we roll into fall, you might be familiar with how we list the growth traits right now, and so we're prototyping that RADG, or residual average daily gain value, to follow just after the yearling weight EPD. So that's kind of something new and exciting, and then we'll work, Dr. McNeil described some of the methodology of working towards putting that into our dollar feedlot value in the form of using that intake genetic piece from the analysis. So as you look at this big picture, what are some of the challenges? And it's really fun when it works, and we also have some days where it's a little tougher. But we've sure learned a lot in less than a year. And one thing that you have to be poised for is that as the research changes and as the genomic panels improve, you have to be ready to do that outreach component with your breeders. But you also have to do some math, or you have to be poised to reestimate the genetic correlations between your phenotypic data and those molecular breeding values. And so you have to allow for that development time and recognize it's a fluid process and an ongoing learning process. We've learned a lot about database management, and you have to allow for multiple genomic results coming in on an animal. We did a lot of research information, but you also have animals that have been on a previous generation panel. They're regenotyped, or various breeders may submit information on a particular animal. So you have to be able to database and history that type of usable information and then pull what pieces that you need for the national cattle evaluation. Printed materials are still a bit of a hiccup, and so you have to have some sort of a born-on or as-of date on printed materials. And again, we still do a huge educational piece on EPDs as a whole, and a lot of our speakers have mentioned that, so there's still a tremendous demand to figure out the best way to boil down these concepts and explain to producers how we're utilizing them in selection tools. So with that, I appreciate your attention, and hopefully that shed some light on what we've tried to accomplish and the concepts that we've learned and implemented and what we plan on doing in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Northcutt. I think we have some time for some questions in case anybody has some. Right over here.
The question was on the cow that had the 11 scan progeny in her own record. Why was her accuracy very similar numerically to the animal that just had the scan only, the genomics only? In terms of the math, it worked out to that. You saw her previous accuracy was about 12 hundredths lower than that. And so she would just be an example of that increase that we're seeing on animals that already have scan information and they receive their genomic profile. And that increase is usually about 0.12 to 0.14 above where they were previously. Now, if she had additional large numbers of progeny through being a donor dam or had some carcass progeny even reflected, her accuracy would move up less than that. And as we look at young AI sires, if they're in an intermediate accuracy, 0.4, say, along those lines, in their profile, you'll see their accuracy come up a little bit and their EPDs move. Sires with very high accuracies, they're essentially fixed for what we know about their breeding value, but that's just a numeric example, and it just really shows you the accuracy that we're getting on animals that just have the profile only, and that relates back to that correlation.
Any other questions?
I have a question related to maybe the phenotypic expression of what we're seeing. That same cow had like a negative 0.008 on the fat, mm-hmm. and that was based on the 11 progeny, so it's based on what she has done. I noticed the fat number changed to a positive 0.024 once you had the genomic data, and to me that's a huge difference. Can you comment on that?
In terms of the fat EPD and where that's out to three decimal places, I mean, that is a mover on that. in terms of her genomic value, it's more informative as an indicator trait of that carcass fat that we're working towards compared with the ultrasound information. And so we see the genomic results in animals like this sometimes overpowering their previous prediction based solely on the ultrasound as an indicator. And in that example, we see a mover. We see some that don't change at all. So we have that whole conglomerate of performance data, pedigree, genomic information, and those relationships contributing to that. And some of the genomic incorporation causes some movers. And some stay the same. So I guess this says we need to put some slides in there where they stay the same, too. Good question.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Northcutt. I'm sure Sally will be around throughout the program, so if you have any more questions, be sure to contact her and get with her on those questions. You want to take one more? We have time. Go ahead.
Of the three things that you mentioned, the genomic profile, the ultrasound data, and carcass data that's sent in, is any one of those three get more weighted merit into those EPDs? Are they all weighted the same, or what's the ratios there?
Great question. In terms of incorporating that all information, we're ultimately trying to assess the carcass traits. So we established the genetic relationships or those correlations between the ultrasound data and the carcass trait, so IMF and marbling, and then the genomic or the molecular breeding value for marbling and carcass marbling. So, yeah, we have to estimate all those genetic relationships, and I can sure share those with you specifically by trait from Dr. McNeil's published results. So it varies by trait and by indicator. You know, in our first generation panel, the correlation wasn't as strong between the genomics and the carcass traits. It did a good job, but then the next generation panels, a lot more powerful with those correlations, more in the order of 0.6.